Good evening. I am Donnell Edwards, your host. Welcome to CWR World News Talk. By any standards, our special guest for today, Dr. George Frazier, has achieved great success and is an outstanding example of what this evening's program is about, reinventing the American dream. However, what many of our listeners may not know about Dr. Frazier is that his phenomenal success didn't just happen. It didn't occur overnight. He was not the product of a wealthy family that afforded him opportunities that others did not have. In fact, he was one of 11 children. He was orphaned at the age of 4. He spent 14 years in foster care, and he grew up in the hard streets of New York. At one point in his life, his high school guidance counselor suggested that he drop out of school because he didn't consider him to be college material. But Dr. Frazier was determined and graduated anyway. For several years, he worked his way through Dartmouth College and paid his own tuition and supported himself by mopping floors on the midnight shift at LaGuardia International Airport in New York City. Dr. Frazier today is considered by many to be the new voice for African Americans and one of the foremost authorities on economic development, networking, and building effective relationships. He is also a New York Times best-selling author, a highly successful speaker, and chairman and CEO of his own company, FrazierNet, Inc., which is the world's number one network for black professionals worldwide and reaches over 1 million black professionals and businesses each year. Among Dr. Frazier's best-selling books are Success Runs in Our Race, Race for Success, The 10 Best Business Opportunities for Blacks in America, Click, 10 Truths for Building Extraordinary Relationships, and his newest book, written in collaboration with internationally renowned motivational speaker Les Brown, is Mission Unstoppable, Extraordinary Stories of Failure's Blessings. Dr. Frazier is also the founder of the annual Power Networking Conference, where thousands of black professionals, business owners, and community leaders gather and learn the art and science of networking, entrepreneurship, and wealth creation. As busy as Dr. Frazier is, he was generous enough to give CWR World News Talk an hour of his time for this program, for which we are profoundly grateful. Dr. Frazier, welcome to CWR World News Talk.
Well, thank you so much, man, and Donnell. And I really, really, really appreciate you and the work that you're doing. You are a community drum. You've charted a good and righteous course, and you are staying that course. And I just cannot tell you, there's nothing more important among the people of this great country, the diverse mix of people in this great country. There's nothing more important than dialogue. There's nothing more important than communications. It is really the door to understanding and the door to friendship and the door to empowerment. And you are a model of a person deeply committed to making sure that that happens, at least to some extent on your watch. So I appreciate you for that.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, Dr. Frazier, you know, it takes a lot of support to accomplish anything. And I am just so extremely gratified to have people like you that support what I'm doing. Now, tonight, as we approach this subject, the American dream, reinventing the American dream, the American dream means many different things, depending upon, you know, who you ask. Many people equate the American dream with money or wealth. On the other hand, some even feel that the American dream is dead because it's so elusive, they feel that it's beyond their reach. So, Dr. Frazier, what does the American dream mean to you?
Well, you know, the American dream has gone through a number of iterations since the concept was introduced in the Declaration of Independence, which essentially, laid out in no uncertain terms it's in the Founding Fathers, its definition of the American dream, which is fundamentally, you know, the pursuit of happiness, basically. But that has evolved. That is sort of an aspirational dream for Americans. You know, the ideal is that every U.S. citizen should have an equal opportunity to achieve success and prosperity, you know, through hard work, determination, and initiative. And who can argue with that? That's what we aspire to. I am not sure that that would be the American dream for many. In fact, the American dream for many has turned into the American nightmare, which you alluded to. So for me, the American dream, I think, you know, I would define it as the pursuit of happiness as you define it, right? As one man's meat is another man's poison. I would say from a material standpoint, and I would add that there is some materialism attached to the American dream, and I think the foundational aspect of materialism would be a home. I mean, minimally, I think that should be a part of the American dream. For me, this is going to sound a little strange, but I'm just going to say hopefully still be loved, to be debt-free. To me, is the American dream, and to be able to finish my assigned work and move into retirement, whenever that may be, and we know that that age is moving up, and living comfortably, right? So having earned and invested in such a way that aside from the public assistance that we all get, Social Security, health care, etc., when we retire, that I would have more than enough to contribute to the intergenerational transfer of wealth. In other words, enough for my wife and I of 45 years to live in retirement comfortably and to leave something to my to children. So that, for me, is the American dream. Now, I must say that's elusive as hell for a lot of people, right? First of all, we know that happiness is relative, right? It's subjective, and we know that a home, if we look at specific cultural minorities in this country, black folk, for example, I'm an African American, we have the fewest number of homes per capita of any cultural group in this country, and we came over here on the Mayflower, and the 2008 financial crash in this country, fundamentally now that it's all been revealed, targeted African Americans for subprime loans, and we lost $10 trillion of wealth in that debacle. So the American dream for some is more possible than for others. But nonetheless, you ask me to define my dream, and I think, of course, that is without question the pursuit of happiness, to make sure that my family has a home, and ultimately we can reach the state of debt freeness and retire in a comfortable way. I think that for me and where I am, I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation, and I fully expect to achieve that in my lifetime. In fact, I have planned and prepared myself and have done the work to, in fact, achieve that. But
okay.
There are many, Donnell, and I'm writing a speech on this, on why most people will never be successful. Why most
That's interesting.
People will never be successful. And we could say that the subtitle could be something like, and this is provocative, if God is so good, why are black people doing so bad? So
that
I just punctuated the point. you can ask me any question about that question or the answer to that question that you like.
Well, I tell you what, could we say that as a whole, when we speak about the American dream, it involves, as you mentioned, opportunity, freedom, and independence with some
mm-hmm.
material aspects attached to it. Is
mm-hmm.
that's
right.
Too simplistic?
That's very accurate.
Okay.
No
all right.
About it. It's not all material. I don't
right.
think the American dream is to have every pair of Jordan Nikes ever introduced to the marketplace. I don't know if that's part of the American dream. But there is a material aspect, a home.
Right.
I don't think that is unreasonable. A reasonable retirement. I don't think that's
okay.
unreasonable.
Okay. Now, when we look at the economy and the way life is today, it's a lot different than it was for our foreparents. So is it correct to say that a different thought process is required today in regard to pursuing and achieving the American dream? For example, years ago, our parents and grandparents could hope to work on the same job 30, 35 years, buy a home, like you were mentioning, send their children to college, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
and when they retired, have a comfortable retirement. For them, that was essentially the fulfillment of their American dream. But in today's economy, most people don't work on the same job for decades, but instead, they will have several jobs before they retire. While inflation increases in each way every year, and income has remained flat. So is a new way of thinking, a different thought process required in regard to achieving the American dream? In other words, a reinvention of the American dream. Is that necessary?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's a wonderful setup or segue to a little story that I'd like to tell. Let's call it an equation for all of those who are listening. If you have a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper, I want you to follow me with this new 21st century equation. The world is changing, now, as you suggested. And anybody living in an apartment or has a garage can do what you do, all right? The world is changing. Access to information, anything you want to know is anywhere and everywhere. You could fundamentally get any knowledge you want about anything on your smartphone just by Googling it.
That's
and
right.
You could just put in a subject matter and 1600 references to that subject would pop up in seconds on your phone. So that means that today, those of us who are entering into the work world, especially in the new work world, will have to have a different level of skills. So I believe today, if you really, really, really don't want to have to worry about where your next dollar is coming from, you're going to have to be amazing at whatever it is that you're doing. So you're going to have four boxes. I'm going to ask you, and you're going to put them right next to each other. So the first box, you're going to put the word average you're going to write that in that box.
Okay.
The next box, you're going to put the word good. It's right next to the average box. The
All
next,
right.
You're going to put the word excellent. And the final box is amazing. All right, so you
okay.
have four boxes next to each other, beginning from left to right with average. So, because the world has changed, today, if you are average at whatever it is that you do, you graduate perhaps from college, nothing special, and you're performing at an average level, you're going to live a poor life. So write the word poor under the box that says average.
Okay.
You're going to live a poor life if you're average. If you're good at what you do, you've got some additional education and some additional skills, and you apply yourself somewhat. If you're good at what you do, you're going to live an average life. Write the word average under good.
Okay.
If you're excellent at what you do, you have degrees and extra knowledge, and you're reading and you're learning and you're excellent at what you do, you're going to live a good life. So put the word good under excellent.
Okay.
Now, if you are amazing at what you do, you're at the top of your game. You are one of the best of the best. You are the creme de la creme brulee at whatever it is you decide to do in life. And I don't care if it's sweeping streets or being a rocket scientist. If you are amazing, you're going to live an excellent life. So put the word excellent under amazing. Now,
okay.
What this represents is a shift. You see, when our parents came up north during the Great Southern Migration to the north to get living wage jobs in the steel factories and the car plants, right? They could be average at whatever it is they were doing, right? Average. They could get a job in the big manufacturing plants, and they could actually live a good or an average to good life. You just said it earlier, right?
Right.
They earned living wages. They had homes, and they sent their children to college and fundamentally fulfilled the American dream, right? Well, all that has shifted. All that has shifted. Now, if you're average, you're going to live a poor life because many of those jobs and opportunities, as you suggested, are gone. They're in China, they're in Singapore, they're in India. Those jobs are gone, right? So if you're average, you know, high school diploma or less, you are going to really struggle today. You're going to live a struggling and probably poor life by the standards of your parents, right? So what I'm saying to you is that there's a whole shift in how we now have to think about preparing ourselves to compete in a global economy. We're going to have to be committed to personal growth and development, constant never-ending improvement, and lifelong learning, and ramping up our game so that we can move to the excellent to amazing boxes that you have written down there and live a life that we want to live that would be essentially equivalent to what our parents during the Southern Migration up north live. And the epitome, of course, is amazing. It's if you're amazing at whatever it is you do, you will never have to worry about competition. You will never have to worry get in line for anybody. People will get in line for you. It's when today you are average to mediocre that you have to worry, because now you're competing with most of America, because most of America is average to mediocre. So now you're competing with everybody, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing that separates you from the masses, right? So if you don't want to work for me for $8 or $10 an hour doing whatever I ask you to do, leave. There's a long line of people, right, who would work for that amount of money. So you have no leverage in a society that is quickly reducing, let's call it repetitive forward slash menial labor, right, to robots and program tasks. Right? So this is especially true for cultural minorities, and it's more difficult because the answer to what has happened to the American dream, right? Or the answer is that urban education is failing, right? So the last 30 or 40 years, interestingly enough, it is the children of cultural minorities in America who are dependent upon at least a basic education to get in the game. That entire educational system is in shambles, and we were not in charge, right? They were in charge.
I totally agree.
Right? But for some strange reason, Donnell, it is only our children, or the children of cultural minorities, basically Hispanics and African Americans, that are suffering the ruins of a fundamental education that will basically relegate them to permanent second-class citizens in this country, right? And as a result of that, what we're also seeing is a growing wealth gap between blacks and whites in America, right? And thus, with a growing and wealth gap, we have less happiness and less hope. Happiness and hope are diminishing among the least among us, because we know that pursuing the American dream technically or theoretically should motivate and inspire us and provide us hope, and that equals happiness, right? Pursuing the American dream and the importance of it gives us the kind of leadership that we can trust and that we can follow, right? And it gives us the success and the prosperity based on hard work and initiative. That's why having a dream, the American dream, is extremely important. But if the infrastructure of that dream has deteriorated or is being kicked out from under you, and that is fundamentally education, right? What is the first thing, for example, the slaves did when they became free? They began building schools, ultimately built our own institutions of higher education, right? Because everything begins with literacy. Everything begins with education. You want to destroy a people? Destroy their system of education. Destroy the education of their children. If you really, really, really long-term want to impact the upward mobility of any culture, destroy the educational system for their children. This is exactly what has happened, which has truncated the American dream for too many people in this country.
Dr. Fraser, I tell you what, you just hit on a very, very important subject for me, and that's education. As a matter of fact, we have a special two-hour virtual online town hall meeting scheduled for June 6th. That's a Tuesday. And we will be discussing the crisis in America's schools. The panel for that discussion include Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, Dr. Julianne Malvo, Dr. Deborah Hunter Harville, Also, Mr. Peter Cunningham, who was with the Department of Education in the Obama administration, and my good friend, Ms. Tanya Knight, who's an education expert. And we're going to dissect some of these things you were just talking about there, and hopefully get into some dialogue that will at least get more awareness and more involvement in the communities to try to do something about the problems we have with education.
That's a wonderful subject, and thank God that you are covering.
Okay.
My sister, Dr. Emma Fraser Pendleton, was assistant superintendent of schools in New York, Harvard PhD, and spent 40 years of her life in New York public education. And she's going around the country now speaking on that subject as an educator in urban public education. And, of course, that question has come up to her on the numerous speaking engagements that she's given around the country, right? Why? What has happened? And Emma has fundamentally said, this has happened because there is no will and no interest on behalf of white folk, because they control the purse strings, they control the system. 95% of the people teaching our children do not look like our children, but fundamentally there is fundamentally no will or interest to educate black children, period, end of sentence. And she was in the system for 40 years. There's no will. If there was will, there is money, and there are things that can be done. But because it's black and brown children, no one really cares. If it was Jewish children, do you think for one minute, Donnell, I don't know how many Jewish friends you have, but I lived in a Jewish community, right? And I lived in a Jewish community on purpose because they take no prisoners when it comes to the education of their children. Do you think if this crap was happening to Jewish boys and girls that it would happen for long? Oh, no.
No.
All no. Hell would break loose. It just wouldn't happen.
Well, I would really like to talk to the lady that you mentioned, because we are still adding people to this program, not necessarily on the panel, but to provide input, because we really like a cross-section from among teachers, parents, organizations, mm-hmm. communities,
yeah.
whatever, to tackle this subject. So I'll get with you later so we can get her information mm-hmm. and hopefully contact her. Okay. All right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For those that's listening, you're listening to CWR World News Talk, and today's topic is Reinventing the American Dream. And our very special guest is Dr. George Fraser. Now, Dr. Fraser, the great American inventor and businessman Henry Ford is quoted as saying, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So how important is it to believe in oneself, to have the unwavering confidence and determination that regardless of what happens, you can be successful and achieve your goals?
That is a loaded and profound question. It's a loaded and profound question, and there are a number of core things that ultimately must occur in one's life to have the intestinal fortitude to succeed at the levels in which one desires, which is the highest level, and to max out your human potential. There are a number of things that must occur. There are a number of things that occurred for me that gave me the inner confidence and the self-esteem necessary to deal with the most important ingredient in the recipe for success. The most important ingredient for the recipe for success is failure.
Failure.
In fact, Les Brown and I wrote a book, you mentioned it earlier, Mission Unstoppable, Extraordinary
right.
Stories of Failures, Blessings. That's the name of the book. You learn more by failing than you do succeeding. In fact, if you're not failing, you ain't doing a damn thing. That means you're not taking any risks. If you ain't failing, you ain't doing nothing, because life is on the edge. That's where all of life is, and you must walk on the edge. You must take risks and know that you're going to fall, you're going to stumble, you're going to have to get back up, and you're going to have to learn, because failure is really not failing, it's just learning, right? So it's learning, and that's the best way to learn. You learn by doing. I tell people all the time, listen, you could read every book you want on how to swim and become a technical expert on swimming and the strokes of swimming, but you cannot swim until you jump in the water.
That's right.
Right? That's when you can swim. You read all the books you want, but jump in the water and let's see if you can do it, all right? So you've got to do, and when you do, you make mistakes, because you don't start out in perfection. You start out learning and practicing. That's what they say about doctors, right? What are doctors doing? They're practicing. Dentists are practicing. Accountants are practicing. Lawyers are practicing. Now, they happen to be practicing on you, but they're still practicing. Right? They're learning
right.
by doing. Now, they have tons of technical knowledge, right? But you really learn by doing. So you have to have the kind of steel and the kind of esteem and the kind of self-confidence to gird yourself, to keep at it, to keep trying. Now, that begins with a couple of things. It begins, of course, if you're gifted with parents, a mother and a father. You need both parents. You need the influence of both. This is how God designed it, right? And I love sisters. There's no question about it. I don't know what we would do without black women. I mean, really, they are remarkable. Remarkable.
I agree.
Historically, right? But we cannot have our women raising our men. That's not how God designed the system. Now, they have done the best they could, but that's not right. And the number one problem in the black home is the absence of black men in the home. That's the number one problem in our culture. And I can't even begin to tell you the domino effect, the trickle up and trickle down effect of two generations of that. That's a whole nother story. You didn't ask me about that. But I said that part of having the self-esteem and comes from the love of both parents, right? Love of both parents, and the positive mental attitude that they either they repeat, and some have to beat. Right? We used to get whippings. Now they were, it wasn't child abuse, but
I have some of those.
Right thing. I'm sure you old school. I'm sure you have. So we know how to raise our children. So that it begins with that. Do you have the right parental influence? Let me say that a different way, because I have two charter schools, right? Two African-centered charter schools, 300 urban children, right? 60% are black boys. And I repeat this all the time. Wherever you find a knucklehead child, you can trace it right back home to a knucklehead parent, right? There's something the parent is not doing. generally speaking, there are always exceptions to the rule, okay? So, A, it begins with the right parenting, right? The right environment in which your parents put you in. Let me say that a different way. Statistics tell us, now this is going to be a revelation for almost everybody listening to this conversation tonight. Statistics tell us that it is better to raise a child in a great neighborhood with crazy parents than in a terrible neighborhood with superb parents. What does that mean? Environment is everything. And I tell parents this all the time. I hope you are raising the friends of your child as much as you're raising your child, because the influence and impact on your child from their so-called friends will be far greater than any impact or influence you will ever be able to have on your child, right? Know who your child's friends are. So parental input and guidance is at the foundation of building self-confidence and self-esteem, right? That's A. B, understanding your history. Understanding your roots, understanding who you really are, not the crap that you see on television and the stereotypes that have been so misplayed abundantly about us and others in the media, right? We are the children of the slaves that would not die, that we have the genetic encoding of the great kings and queens of Africa, that we were building pyramids and solving complex engineering problems when other cultures were living in caves, eating each other, right? And in spite of the fact that America kept its foot on our throat for 350 years, we overcame that and rose like the phoenix. And if everything happens for a reason and serves us in some special way, and we will never understand that reason looking forward, and we will only understand it looking backwards, if in fact that is the truth, and it is the truth, maybe we were not brought here. Maybe we were sent here. Do you believe that God would put his weakest people here to do his toughest job? How could an America who could morally, spiritually, and biblically justify the kidnapping, raping, and pillaging of another two people, natives already in America and Africans brought to America, have any moral or spiritual grounding? And perhaps had God not sent us here, Africans, to America, America might have self-destructed by now. We are an awesome and powerful people. And my parents and my network and models and coaches and colleagues drill that into me. That built confidence and self-esteem. It got me ready for failure and lack of opportunity.
Okay. All right. That's very interesting. I want to go back a little bit in time. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but I asked you a question similar to the one that I just posed to you back in April of 2009 when I interviewed you for our magazine, our empowerment magazine, the College World Reporter. By the way, that interview with Dr. Frazier is now available on our website, the CWRWorldNews.net. Under the interviews tab. And during that interview, Dr. Frazier, you said, and I quote, "It doesn't matter where you start, it matters where you finish. God deals all of us cards, and we have to learn to play those cards. And if we learn to play those cards as smartly as we can, with as positive of a mental attitude as possible, you will get new cards," end of quote. Now, do those comments still apply to the conversation we're having tonight about reinventing the American dream?
Absolutely. Right. So, in other words, where we are is what it is at this moment in time.
Okay.
Thus, from a spiritual perspective, I prefer to believe this is the hand that God has dealt us. Now, God has more complex and deeper reasons to have dealt us this hand, because we know that the Creator will never take away our ability to choose, right? We will always have the ability to choose. God wants us to have unlimited choices. But then it is the management of our choices that is the essence of living, right? It's how we choose. So, yes, that still applies to what we were talking about earlier, the whole American dream. There's no question about that. But this is the hand that we have. These are the cards that we have. These are the times that we are in. These are the circumstances, and the circumstances that led up to these circumstances. So we now have to deal with it, right, where it is at this moment in time. So that means you have to adjust. So one of the things, one of the reasons that so many people will never succeed is because they will not evolve. They will not change. So in other words, what we're talking about, Donnell, is change. That's really what we're talking about, is change. And God is constantly talking to us, telling us exactly what to do. Except most of us choose not to listen, right? Because it requires change. It requires evolving. It requires growth. It requires constant, never-ending improvement, lifelong learning, right? Personal growth and development. It's just easier sitting on a couch drinking a beer watching television, right? So most people will not do the work necessary to be more competitive, more prepared, I should say, in this world as it is at this moment in time. Now, if we were to come back here 50 years from now, it will have changed again. We don't know what the circumstances will be, but we know what the circumstances are now. We know what they were in 1619. We know what they were in 1864. We know what they were in 1964. And we know what each of those periods in our lives, right, was quantum change. And we adjusted. Some of it was, wonderful, and some of it was egregious. So we have to deal with it as we know now. And the ways that we do that is through building self-esteem, building self-confidence, okay? Having a network, and we can talk about that. That's very, very important. And having models around you, people who coach you and mentor you, and people that you can model icons, people that they don't even know that they're coaching you and mentoring you. Earl Grace was one of my models like that. I mean, Earl, I grew up fundamentally born in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, New York, and Earl Grace grew up in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, New York, but he was 10 years ahead of me. But I always admired the way he comported himself, the way he dressed. He was very entrepreneurial. He was politically savvy. He had a great sense of humor. So he was a model for me, and I modeled my behavior, including my dress and the way I comported myself, and I would hang on every word that he wrote, every word that he said. Ultimately, I ended up on the cover of Black Enterprise magazine, as he was the founding father of that magazine.
Right.
I ended up on the cover of that magazine, right? So, but again, we have to deal with the times as they are and prepare ourselves, right? Let me say that a different way. Mama taught me, if you know that it's raining, bring an umbrella. Right? If you use racism as a reason to fail, guess what? You're going to fail because there is racism. Therefore, racism wins and you lose.
That's true.
I didn't choose to lose. Therefore, I know that there is the isms of America, and therefore I prepare myself for them, right? And I'm not going to allow them to determine or dictate my life. I'm going to determine and dictate my life. because I have the confidence and the esteem and the knowledge and the opportunity. This is America. This is the greatest country in the world. There is no place that I would rather live. I've been all over the world twice, and there is no better place for people of African descent that I've ever been. I've been to Africa 18 times, just got back from Egypt, right? There's no place I'd rather live than right here. So there's unlimited opportunity in spite of the isms of America. So that's not the problem. The problem for us is not opportunity. Our problem is capacity. Capacity. That we, in the 21st century, must work on building our capacity to take advantage of the unlimited opportunities. And you do that through personal growth and development, constant never-ending improvement, and lifelong learning. You are constantly evolving, and the minute you stop evolving, the minute you stop growing, you die. And all of nature should teach us this. All you have to do is observe everything God has created, everything in nature. It is either growing or it is dead.
It's true.
Never stop growing.
It's true. You mentioned something that I would like to allude to that's very important, and that's the influence that other people may have on us, and especially you were talking about the education and someone educating their child's friend while they're educating their child. Back in that interview, when I was researching for our tonight's program, there was something that I read that was just so profound. I have to share it with the audience. It may rub some people the wrong way, but it's just so powerful. I think everyone needs to think about this. And this is what you said, Dr. Frazier, quoting, "I learned the need to remove toxic people and bloodsuckers from my life. People who drain you of your time, of your energy, and of your patience. This is very, very important. It is very easy to say, very difficult to do. Why? Because many of those friends or those people are your family members or your significant others or people who claim to be your close friend. Introduce me to your five closest friends, and that will tell me who you are. As they know and as they go, you go. In other words, don't spend major time with minor people. People going nowhere want you to go nowhere with them. People doing nothing want you to do nothing with them. If you want to change your life, change your relationships. Life is about relationships. And a lot of people think it's about education." End of quote. So, Dr. Frazier, would you elaborate on what you meant?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Okay.
Education, now let's not get it twisted. Education, talked about earlier, is profoundly important, but it is not enough. That's really what I'm saying. It's not enough. It is profoundly important, just want to repeat, but it is not enough. That there are tons of really smart people out here. Get in a very long line, right? The people who excel are the people that have a high EQ, that's emotional intelligence, the ability to manage your five most important emotions, and to use the management of those emotions to cultivate, nurture, and to build relationships at work, at home, and in the community. Your interpersonal and people skills, as you get older and wiser, what one will understand is that your EQ, your emotional quotient or intelligence, will be more important than your IQ. But that does not mean that you should not bring anything to the table from a skills base or educational base basis, right? But you've got to combine that with a powerful skill in cultivating, nurturing, and building relationships. Why? Because, well, there's a biblical passage, John 5:30 is a direct quote from Jesus Christ. And there are not that many direct quotes from Jesus Christ in the Bible, but here it is. Mm-hmm. And Jesus said, I of my own self can do nothing. Now, this was Jesus. Jesus couldn't get it done on his own by himself in a vacuum. So what's up with you? Why would you think you could do anything significant, anything on your own, by yourself in a vacuum? You can. It is all about relationships. I've been preaching and teaching this for 30 years. I've written 6 best-selling books on this subject. It's about relationships, especially if you're engaged in business, and in almost everything and facets of our life is some element of business, and business is about relationships. Without relationships, you have no business. Without relationships, you have no business being in business. In fact, the business we're all really in is the business of building relationships. You've got to do whatever you're going to do in life with and through other people. So that is the preeminent prerequisite skill that one needs to learn, but you learn it. It is not necessarily in your DNA, right? You learn it, and you cultivate it, and then you build the relationships necessary to take you to levels in life that you can envision and dream. So you're going to have to work on 3 kinds of networks. It's not just one network. It's 3 kinds of networks that you're going to have to work on all of your life, through every passage of your life. And we get about 8 passages, and each passage is about 10 years. Let me say that differently. You're a different person at 10 than you were at 1. You're a different person at 20 than you were at 10. Right? Let us pray. You're a different person at 30 than you were at 20. You're a different person at 40 than 30, 50 than 40, 60 than 50. Today I'm 72, right? And I'm a different person than when I was 60, right? So we're constantly evolving and changing. That means that people are coming in and out of our lives through the various passages of our life. There are very few of us are still hanging around with our crew that we had when we were 10 years old. Very few, right? You might have 1 or 2, but when you compare them to the number of other relationships that you have, it's a very tiny percentage. So we're constantly evolving and constantly working on, throughout our entire life, 3 important relationships: your personal network, right? Or 3 networks, I should say. Your personal network. These are your close circle of friends. These are the people that cheer you on, lift you up, right? And love you. Let's call that your network at home. And we know that if things are not right at home, they tend to infect, affect, and effect all other aspects of your life. So that's your personal network. The second network that you have to work on is what I call your operational network. And these are the people that help you to get specific tasks done in life, whether it's your position in your place of business, whether you're a volunteer or a deacon in your church or working in an organization. These are the people that come in and out of your life during the various passages of your life as you come in and out of other people's lives, and help them and assist them through getting specific tasks done. All right. That's the operational network. Let's call that your network at work. And then the final network is your strategic network. These are the people that are smarter than you. These are the people that will drag you into the 21st century kicking, screaming, and crying. These are the people that will ultimately be your mentors and coaches. Because if you are the smartest person in your network, you're in the wrong damn network. Right? You don't want to be the smartest person in your network, because you can't grow. Who's reaching down and lifting up and pulling you? Who's teaching you? Who's coaching you? Who's mentoring you? So you have to work on all 3 of those networks: personal network at home, operational network, let's call that at work, and your strategic network in the community. But
thank you.
We don't tend to do that. And that's why so many of us suffer by not maximizing our full human potential.
Thank you for explaining that, because networking was one of the things that I was going to ask you about in this program, and I really appreciate you getting into that. So the networks, the system of networks that you refer to, help to add positive things to a person's life, and you eliminate, that doesn't mean that you cast off even your family members or whatever that may be negative influences, uh-huh. but you don't provide the energy and the time and things that would interfere with your growth and development to those negative influences. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
It's extraordinarily important that you're able to remove, as you quoted me, toxic people and bloodsuckers from your life, people who drain you of your time, your talent, your treasure, people who drive you crazy, right?
Okay.
I mean, there are people out here that will come into your life that will do that, and you've got to have the strength to bless them and release them. I didn't say curse them out. I just said bless them, release them, and back off. And replace them with more productive, more loving, more caring, more serving relationships. Because that is congruent with the purpose of life. Right? The purpose of life is very simple. We tend to make things complicated, but God doesn't make anything complicated because he needs for everybody to understand it. Right? So we make things complicated for a couple of reasons. The first reason we tend to make things complicated is so that we don't have to do it. So the more complicated I can make something, the more reasons I have for not doing it. The second reason we tend to make things complicated is to control power. So the more complicated I can make something, the more control I have over you, because you don't really understand it. 2008, the economic downfall, credit default swaps. Very few people even understood what a swatch was or a credit default swap, right?
Uh-huh.
And that gave the people who did understand it power. Now, they used it badly and illegally. So let me just clarify for everybody listening the purpose of life: to love, to give, to serve, and to add the highest value every minute of every day to somebody or something. There is no other reason to be sucking up this air. This is why God put you here: to love, to give, to serve, and to add the highest value every minute of every day. Today, you give your best, and tomorrow, you do even better. Once you have that as a core philosophy, it's impossible to fail.
Great, great. If you just joined us, this is CWR World News Talk. And I'm your host, Donnell Edwards. Tonight's topic is reinventing the American dream. And our very special guest is best-selling author, motivational speaker, and businessman, Dr. George Frazier. Now, we mentioned at the outset of our program, Dr. Frazier, that there are some that have the tendency to look at successful people and think that their success just happened. It was overnight. And they think nothing about paying dues. They never consider the sacrifices that were made, the effort that was required, the price that was paid and spent, emotion, and family and life challenges. In your own case, you know, after getting out of college and earning your degree, you worked in corporate America for 17 years at companies like Procter & Gamble, United Way, Ford Motor Company. And so for those listening to tonight's broadcast, what do you say to them about the necessity of paying dues and what forms that may take in a person's life?
That's a great question. First of all, you're not going to get out of life without paying dues. So get with the program, right? They're dues to be paid by all of us. There are no exceptions to this rule. Right? And the more willingness you have to pay those dues, make the sacrifice to do the work, you know, we can say that dues are really disguised as hard work and failure. That's dues. That's what it is. It's hard work, right? As Mama used to say, elbow grease, right? Put your nose to the grindstone. Get with it. Daddy used to say, what you do speak so loudly, I can't hear what you say. Right?
Mm.
So I see your lips running, I see your mouth running, but are you doing it?
Okay.
So those are the dues. You're going to have to pay those. There's no way around that. Right? So come to grips with that. You're just going to have to decide what level, you want to pay those dues. You want to make sacrifices. And the greater the sacrifice, the greater the reward, right? And because people bet on the jockey. They don't bet on the horse. I ain't betting on no damn horse. I'm betting on the person riding the horse. That's who I'm betting on, right? So they're betting on you, right? I tell people this all the time when they write a business plan, and they a real fancy business plan. They've got all these numbers and it's well done. And any savvy entrepreneur or investor, they'll look at your business plan. I'll look at your business plan. And, that might be 30% of what I'm interested in, right? I'll look at the numbers. You know what the other 70% is? You.
That's right.
What have you done? That's the other 70%, right? So you could have a glowing business plan that you can prove out financially. But if I think you ain't savvy, you ain't cool, I can't trust you, and there's not much that you can talk about that convinces me that you have the work ethic and the honesty and the trust and ultimately the skills to do this business, you will not be getting my money. All right? So, people, get with the program. The program is sacrifice. No pain, no gain. No resistance, no strength. No rain, no rainbow. Right? As I like to tell people all the time, the truth will set you free, but it will make you miserable first, right? Right. So that's the truth, right? You're going to have to roll up your sleeves. You're going to have to do the work. You're going to have to make the sacrifice, and it's okay. You'll get through it, right? Because if you look at all things in nature, again, struggle in the beginning, and then... Right? They're, once they struggled to root themselves, let us say, metaphorically, then an oak tree can grow to the clouds. Right? Now, why can the oak tree, once it gets past its struggling, or a bamboo tree, can grow freely and effortlessly as tall as nature will allow it? Because an oak tree ain't trying to be a bamboo tree. And a bamboo tree is not trying to be a rose bush. They know what they're here for. And that's why once they get past the pain of growth, rooting themselves, right? So they can have a solid foundation, right? Then they grow. Then it's effortless. The work that I do, people say, how do you do this? You give all these speeches, and first of all, it wasn't in the early stages effortless, right? It was growing and learning the art and science of what I do, and continuing to study history and people and diversity and inclusion, and reading the Bible and the Bhagavad Gita and the Torah, just getting some or getting rounded in spirituality, right? Constantly, that now the work that I do, it's effortless, right? It's easy, right? Because the foundation, the commitment, the sacrifices were made to put me at this point. And that's not just me, right? That's anybody that applies themselves, regardless of color. Now, will it be more difficult for people of color? Of course. But that's nothing new. Our parents told us that we're going to have to be twice as good to get half as much. Because if you're black and mediocre in America, you better leave because you're going to be marginalized. So President Obama was the president of the Harvard Law Review. Brilliant. Right? He was a black man. He had to be all of that and a bag of chips to become president of the United States. And look who replaced him.
Yes.
Look who replaced him. I don't think he could hold President Obama's book bag if he was at Harvard. Right? So let me say this to our mixed audience, whoever's out there who's not of color. Let me say this and still be loved. Right? You will know that it is the end of racism in America when a mediocre black man could rise in the corporate world. That will never happen.
Hmm.
Right? Do you know how many mediocre white guys I've worked for in my lifetime? Right? Right? You don't think that Donald Trump is mediocre? It's certainly when it comes to policy and politics. Right? He's mediocre at best, and he's president of the United States. Had Barack Obama said one-tenth of what Donald Trump said, he wouldn't have been elected dog catcher. We got to be
that is true.
To get half as much.
Yeah.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Well, you know, there are, as we mentioned before, a number of times, really, through this program, there are real obstacles that have to be overcome. One of those that you mentioned is the lack of education in the public schools for our children, and the whole debacle in education. And for our teachers listening in, this is not in any way negative, saying anything negative about teachers. We know that there are myriads of problems, and most of the teachers do an outstanding job with what they have to work with. But it's a broken system. And so looking at those things, one of the things that I profoundly believe in and that I promote at every opportunity to help people to rise above the problems in pursuing the American dream is entrepreneurship. It's my belief and my experience that a person is much better off as an entrepreneur or business owner than he or she is working for someone else. Now, obviously, not everyone is interested in being an entrepreneur or business owner, or maybe have the desire to do that, but everyone has some skill or ability that may be converted into an income-making enterprise, and that's an entrepreneur. So is being an entrepreneur one way to reinvent the American dream, Dr. Frazier?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My business is celebrating its 30th anniversary. We've had two goals for 30 years. One, to help black people build wealth that could be transferred intergenerationally. Proverbs 13:22, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. That's number one. And number two is to help black people become the number one employer of black people by the end of the 21st century. That we too must create work and jobs for our people. So we must shift our foundational thinking, which is the thinking of my parents. When my father came to this country in the early 1900s from Guyana, he married a beautiful, fair-skinned sister, Ida Mae Baldwin, from Lumpkin, Georgia. They had 11 children, and they moved to Brooklyn, New York, 8 boys and 3 girls. And Dad couldn't get a good education and get a good job as a black man coming to this country in the early 1900s. So what did he want for his children? He wanted them to get a good education and to get a good job. That's what he wanted. That was the right thing at that time. But that's not what I'm teaching my two sons. I've taught them to get a good education and to create a job. Create a job for yourself. Create a job for your children. If God gives you the power and the glory, create work and jobs for our people. So that whole mindset has to shift. And yes, we need to be recycling our dollars and to support our entrepreneurs. No question about that. We need to buy black without question, but sell to anybody, right? You don't have to only sell to black people. Buy black, but sell to anybody. So we have to shift what we're teaching our children, and we have to support the businesses that deserve our support so that we can recycle those dollars. And then we have to create businesses where we can sell our products and services to anybody. And right now, Africans in America are the consumption class. Europeans in America are the merchant class. They make stuff and sell stuff, and we buy it. So we have to shift from being the consumption class, consumers, to the merchant class. In America, two things are going on 24/7. Somebody's buying and somebody's selling.
Right.
So I'm telling brothers and sisters, stop doing all the buying and do some selling. You make cookies, put them in a box, sell it to somebody. If you live on a farm, take the manure, put it in a bag, put your name on it, become an entree manure, okay, and sell it to somebody. Stop doing all the damn buying and sell something, right? So that will help us move towards an entrepreneurial mindset when we start thinking multiple streams of income. Right, there should not be a black person in America with a single stream of income. You should have multiple streams of income. That's what we teach
exactly.
People how to do it. How we do it at the Power Networking Conference. How we do that at the Power Networking Conference. I want to encourage, if you're thinking entrepreneurially, if you're thinking how to better manage your money and manage your wealth, if you're thinking wellness, both psychological wellness and physical wellness, the Power Networking Conference, July the 5th through the 8th, Prince George's County, the Gaylord Hotel, is the place that you need to be. If you'd like to know more about this conference, there's no conference on the planet like it. Forbes magazine called it one of the top five conferences not to be missed in America. Not one of the top five black conferences, one of the top five of all the conferences in this country. So if you're interested, just go to powernetworkingconference.com, www.powernetworkingconference.com. You can find out all about our agenda, our programs, and all the incredible faculty members and speakers. It's just thebomb.com. This is our 16th conference. So, you know, putting on a conference for 16 years, you know, you've done it enough to know how to do it right. So
right.
I want your audience to look into that and to join us in Maryland at, you know, the National Harbor for the July 5th through 8th time period.
Okay. Following on that question and your answer, there's one last comment I want to share with our audience, especially anyone that's listening who thinks that they don't have what it takes to be an entrepreneur, that they're limited in their skills or ability, who doesn't see the need to take control of their life and their ability to earn. This is what Dr. Frazier said in our 2009 interview when asked about recognizing and developing one's strengths and talents. And I quote, just simply ask yourself what gives you the greatest fulfillment, the greatest joy, and the greatest satisfaction. What things that you do that you truly enjoy that gives you the greatest fulfillment, the greatest joy, and the greatest satisfaction. And whatever those things are, this is what God has put you here to do. And then you have to find a way to make a living doing those things, end of quote. Now, that's powerful stuff, Dr. Frazier. That's really powerful stuff there. So does that mean that anyone, regardless of their circumstances, their environment, if they're willing to put forth the effort to develop their skills and abilities, they have the opportunity to succeed as an entrepreneur?
anyone. God has put each person here with a unique purpose in mind. There's a job that he's assigned only you to do. And if you do not do it, it will not be done in the universe. It is your job. And your first job in life is to find what that is, right? And that is the journey in life that we all have, is finding our path, finding our road, which means that we have to experiment. We have to do lots of things. And there will be some things we say, oh, I hate this. Well, then if you hate it, you know that God didn't put you here to do it, right? So we go through the hills and valleys of life in search of our purpose, right? That is one of the main jobs in life. So everybody, there's something here. There's an assignment that you are on. Make no mistake about it. There's an assignment that you are on, and that is your purpose. And you have to honor that purpose. And if you honor that purpose, you will live a fulfilling and bountiful life, because God will never give you an assignment that he will not give you the tools to complete that assignment. And so you just have to demonstrate to the powers that be, right, that you have the discipline, you have the resilience, you have the tenaciousness and the creativity to complete your assignment.
Well, Dr. Frazier, we couldn't let you go without asking about your new book. The title itself is really inspiring, Mission Unstoppable, Extraordinary Stories of Failures, Blessings. What can readers expect from reading your book, your new book?
They're going to get 37 people that Les Brown and I, a personal interview, who had powerful stories of failing. But the story, their failure story, ended up, now that they look back, ended up being profound foundations for their success, right? So I love reading stories about failure, because that's where all the lessons in life are learned. You learn a lot more from failure than you do from success. So I love reading biographies, for example, because in the biography, you have the arc of the story is birth, right? Growth, failure, growth, failure, growth, right? That's the arc of the story. I mean, that's what life is. And so what I'm most interested in is, what did people do? What was required in their own personal life, right, to reach the levels of success that they had attained? You know, what kind of resilience did they have? How did they solve the problem? What did it take? I'm interested in that, because I'm interested in finding the common threads to all those that have succeeded beyond average. What are those threads? And many of those threads are the things we talked about this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're going to find in Mission Unstoppable. But it's not just Les and I's story. Of course, we have a story of our failure in there, and then how it led to ultimate success. So, but other people, interesting people from all over the country, and all colors too, all colors.
Okay. All right. Very good. I know you are a firm believer in reading, and reading your way to success. And I also believe that as well. I know at one time you were reading, I believe, 100 books a year on average, 2 a week.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so what would you say to our audience about the power of reading in regard to helping a person to achieve success?
Well, I'll just give you a simple reason why reading will put you ahead of most others. The average American reads one book a year. If you read one book a month, within 5 years, you'll have read 60 books, and the average American will have only read five. You are going to be much better prepared. You're going to earn more money, and you're going to have more opportunities, because not only should you be well-versed in your own skill set, whatever you choose to do in life, but you should have a sort of a 360-degree mindset. In other words, you want to know a little bit about a lot of things. You want to be able to have a conversation other than the latest basketball game and how the weather is doing, right? And so the more conversational you are, the more interesting you are, the more well-rounded you are, the easier it is to connect with people, to relate to people, to be able to tell good stories, and to be able to lead and coalesce people around you. So that's hugely important. Reading is extraordinarily important.
It's like the old motto, reading is fundamental. Dr. Frazier, we thank you so much for being our guest tonight on CWR World News Talk and for sharing your vast knowledge and insight on the important subject of reinventing the American dream and how to do it. And for our listeners, be sure to get Dr. Frazier's new book, written with the great Les Brown, Mission Unstoppable, Extraordinary Stories of Failure's Blessings. Available now from Amazon.com, I believe. And thanks thanks again for joining us today, Dr. Frazier. And be sure to join us again next week, along with our special guest, Ms. Terry Pyle, who is one of the leading authorities of the nation on career planning and is a certified global career development facilitator, when we discuss job-seeking advice for today's job market. Until then, have a wonderful week.
Thank you so much.